Shabbat Shalom. The end of Leviticus is a strange place in the Torah. If we think about it, Genesis was the startup phase. Exodus led to the establishment of a leadership. Since there was no real leadership of the Israelites as a people before Moses, Leviticus led to the establishment of a religious leadership through Aaron and his sons, and the recognition that one leader just couldn't do all the work. There had to be shared responsibility for the holy. Finally, the Israelites stand on the mountain, on the pinnacle, both literally and physically, of the world that was and the one that must be. The generation of the desert has reached its crowning moment of glory, and as we all know, they must descend and fail for another generation to arise in the future. This high point for the Israelites also means that they will be grouped and ranked and situated around that tabernacle, not as a bunch of ex-slaves, but as an armed camp of tribes that moves towards its mission, its promised land. When I read this Torah portion, it got me thinking about that mountain and the idea of standing between worlds. Often mountains are not just metaphorical boundaries, they're actually how countries define themselves. They are natural defenses against an army. And the ability of mountains to awe individuals makes them have words such as majestic or even holy tied to them. No one in Japan would tell you that Fuji is just another piece of rock. There are times, though, when we have mountains that are not just metaphors from the past. There are even metaphors for today. We were visited by an old, shall we cautiously use the word, friend this past week. Maybe fiend would be a better word. When you're in Jerusalem, specifically in the south, and you look towards the Negev, your eye will be caught by an odd-shaped mountain. The mountain has quite a normal base, but as you try to follow the natural ascending and descending parts of the mountain, there's something strange. It's as if somebody has placed a fez on top of the mountain. The sides become sheer, and the top appears to be flat. This is one of the many fortresses built by one of the most famous, infamous kings in our history, the king known as Herod the Great. His memory has its greatest renown from the days when, according to Christian scriptures, Herod attempted to kill a little baby named Jesus. Many might think this was an exaggerated story meant to demonize this king, perhaps to demonize the Jews, but, well, Herod was just that paranoid. Known for killing people, and in particular for having his own family members assassinated, he has gone down in our history books as a great builder and fanatical lunatic. Herod was afraid of revolt, Cleopatra, one of the many reasons for these fortresses, Rome, the Jewish masses, and perhaps he even harbored some of his own demons. Known for building, Herod constructed Herodion, maybe he ran out of names, to be his southern Jerusalem fortress. He was also responsible for Masada and Betar. This week, it is believed that Herod's tomb was found at Herodion. This mountain that Herod sculpted into a fortress was also his final resting place. Now, many might just pass this off as another moment in history when a bunch of rocks were put together and another dead VIP was entombed, but the discovery of Herod's tomb has sent out shockwaves. First, Herod is arguably the last Jewish king to rule over Judea. Yes, his sons Agrippa and Antipas did rule for a time, but they were not known by the title king. Additionally, Herod stands and was entombed in the mountain between the Jewish world that was the Hasmonean, think Maccabees, dynasty, and the rule of the Roman Empire that would follow and eventually lead to the destruction of the Second Jewish Commonwealth and the brutal desecration of the Promised Land. This is the history. But what of today? First, Herod's grave proves something that Palestinians have been desperately attempting to hide. Namely, Jews did populate the area of Palestine with a Jewish king, and the finding of Herod's tomb just bolsters this historical fact. In spite of the fact that the name Palestine comes from the time when the Romans renamed the land as a further insult, injury to the Jews after the revolt of 135, there has still been an aggressive effort to keep history in the ground and to undermine Jewish claims to the land of Israel. Please see any of the issues regarding the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, where the Palestinians can, arguably, protest on the basis of religious grounds. Herodian was not on their map of potential landmines that might upset the apple cart of Muslim-Palestinian revisionist history by finding the tomb of the last Judean king. Secondly, the current political situation in Israel also can't escape the last dead king of Israel. As we look at the situation in the state of Israel, we find a leader who is probably looking out of his window and may just be fearing for his political life. Of course, Herod would have actually been fearing for his biological life. The Winograd Report by former Israeli Supreme Court justices has come out hard against Olmert. This in turn has led to protests in the street and people beginning to wonder whether or not Ehud's days are numbered. While Herod had Cleopatra to worry about, Olmert has Livni. And this week, it seemed that they were beginning to have a little friction, balancing loyalty to the Kadima party and her own political ambitions must be difficult for the Israeli Foreign Secretary. Yet, that's where it is. Almost as if they too are on the mountain between worlds. Namely, the world that was, the one set up by Ariel Sharon, the one that founded the Kadima party, and the one that now exists, which tells us that, according to the Israeli public, they have fumbled the powerful promise they inherited, and that if Kadima were to go to elections today, they would receive only 12 mandates, 12 seats in the Knesset, as opposed to the 29 they currently hold. The ability of the party to remain cohesive after it stole some of the greatest talents based solely on Sharon's leadership will only be borne out by time. What to do? Well, one thing is to go out and find more about Herodian and Herod. Who was it that said that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it? Perhaps Herod is a reminder of not repeating history. The second is that as we head into this summer, we are facing some of the same issues that existed last summer. I'm personally praying for a quiet, hot summer in Israel. But with Hezbollah rearming and also claiming that Olmert is another casualty of the war, we have to wonder about the prospects for peace. Find your Israeli news source and stay tuned, and pray that there's another way out of the current crisis. We know how this ended last year. We can only pray for the insight to find a better and different way to end a possible conflict before it starts. Many of us know the game King on the Mountain, which used to be just an excuse for boys to roughhouse. Yet in Herod's day, it was often a matter of survival. If the Israelites had remained on Mount Sinai, though, perhaps things would have remained the same. But one cannot remain at the pinnacle of a mountain for too long. It is an effort to ascend to such places. And unfortunately, the only people who get to remain on top are those who no longer draw breath, those who no longer live. As we reach the top of our mountain at this time, we can only hope that as we look at what awaits us as we descend, that we can possibly find something better and more positive than where we came from last summer. Shabbat Shalom.